Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You're listening to a Weeby Geeks Network podcast.
Welcome
to Never Never Land.
We're going to bring ghosts from all over the world.
Join us. Be sure to bring your death certificate.
Well, take your pixies out of your pockets, Neverlanders. Sprinkle some of that pixie dust around, grab your happiest thought, and we're flying away to Neverland. With me, it's Jeremy, your Spider-Pan. And once again, I'm not flying with Lost Boy Eric today. What is with us? Where has Eric been? We're missing him around here, but don't worry, he'll be back very soon. But we're not going alone. We've brought our brand new pixie that I'm just talking to for the very first time ever. Woohoo! So please welcome from the Tierra Talk Show, Tammy Tucky.
Hi, everyone! Hi! How are you? I'm so excited to be here. I heard the hook clip of Maggie Smith saying to Never Never Land,
oh, yes.
And I'm obsessed with that film. So awesome. I just love it.
Awesome. Yeah, I used to use a lot more clips from that film because, I mean, obviously we were in Neverland here. So I used a lot of it, but I've kind of started mixing around doing some other things. The weird thing
that sounds
is,
great.
The weird thing is my wife thinks that movie is just okay. I can't believe it.
What?
Criminal.
How dare she?
I know.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, and I didn't find out until we'd been married for quite a few years, and I was like, really? Why didn't you tell me this before? But that's okay. I'd have married her anyway. We're very Aww. Different on a lot of stuff. She doesn't quite understand the whole Disney obsession, but that's because she's never been to one of the parks, so.
Oh, she's never been yet. Oh, my goodness.
Been. And I've only been once, and that was enough that I'm hooked. I want to go back.
Oh, I hope she gets there at some point, because,
oh, yes.
You know, it really does change your life.
Yeah.
At least that's how I think about it.
Oh, yes. And even though she's an introvert, I know we will find a way. And I'm actually working on developing a show later where we're going to say, we'll figure out what's the best way for an introvert to enjoy the parks. I've got the fella from a show called Disney Hacks that I'm working with him. I don't know when we're going to get this show going because I've got so much on my plate right now. But it is coming. For all of you with introvert family members and friends, we will help you bring them to the park and get them in the crowd.
Seriously. I think a lot of shows are a great gateway for that as well. I would even say some of the musicals that I kind of got to grow up watching in the theme parks, I think, I wish it was still there, the Hunchback of Notre Dame stage show. That was a great way because Quasimodo is an introvert. You know what I mean? You know, when you connect with somebody who reminds you of yourself, that is just a beautiful scenario, especially when you're watching a show. So I would always suggest that, but it's not there. So womp womp.
I would like to have seen that show. That's one of those movies I think is really underappreciated. I love that movie.
You would love the show. I'll send you a link to watch it because it was really spectacular. And I was told by, I interviewed a couple of the cast members and I got to talk to them. And they said it was one of those times when you have the Make-A-Wish children that come to the actual show. And some of them are deformed in their own ways. And this is one of the only characters probably in any type of literary history and film history that they can connect with because they see that he's also deformed. But he's a human being and he is the hero.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people... It was really sad that they took that away and, you know, because they saw that it really opened a lot of doors to a lot of the Make-A-Wish children. They loved the show. They loved the message of it. And, you know, it gets me emotional when I think about it. But, you know, I identified with Quasi too, because, you know, you always feel like you're on the inside looking out at some points, you know, not always outside looking in, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I totally understand him, and I understand the spunkiness of Esmeralda and the sassiness of Phoebus. So it's like that, it's really a great dynamic. So if you ever get a chance to watch it online, it's The Hunchback of Notre Dame, a musical spectacular. I believe that's what the full name of it was. It was on the back lot when you went on New York Street at Hollywood Studios. It was on the back lot, way, way back lot, and now it's an indoor closed theater that they used to have the Frozen sing-along at, and now that is moved to the American Idol Experience stage. So it's still there, but it's not what it used to be. But that, you know, that it's, you know, times change and things change, but maybe we might see it in the future. I hope so.
Yeah. And, well, Europe apparently had a full Broadway style production that was touring through Europe, and they never brought it over here.
They did. They actually tested it out in California, and they brought it over to the Paper Mill Playhouse here in New Jersey, because I'm on the East Coast, so I'm closer to New York. And they were testing it to run to Broadway. But if you think about it, they wanted a full core. They wanted a full choir, basically, 40 people on the stage every night, plus the 20-plus cast members, plus the 25-plus crew members, that type of thing, and the orchestra. And that's a lot of money going into a show that's, you know, like pretty, pretty it's the stage was pretty bare. It was more of like up to the audience member to really get into that sense of Quasi's Notre Dame. So I got to see it, and the most spectacular stage show I've ever seen in my life. And I'm very sad it didn't go to Broadway, but I'm blessed that I got to go to the D23 event, the Disney fan event, to see it for myself. And it was one of those things when you finally see Hellfire on stage, it's just, it's like, the feels. I can't explain it. I really, like, it's one of those things where I think you would appreciate it. I know I've heard rumors that they might make Hook into a musical. Actually, that's what it was. That was what it was going to be. And, you know, there were things that happened and changed. I would love to see that too. You know what I mean? That, and now they're bringing Prince of Egypt to Broadway, possibly. I'm so excited. Like, these are the films I really grew up with. They're very dark, and they're very sometimes depressing, but the character development and the music is just one of those things that really wakes you up as a child. It's one of those things you just can't bypass.
Yes, two of like the greatest emotional songs, at least for an animated film, was Deliver Us from the Prince of Egypt and Rescue Me from the Rescuers.
Yes, that's true. Oh, and then that one, the one song from the Rescuers, that beautiful lullaby that plays while the little girl's getting ready for bed. That is so emotionally, I can't remember what it's called. Be Brave, Little One, I think.
Yeah.
That one is just really disturbing too. You know, there are disturbing Disney songs, but they're so beautiful that, you know, you kind of see past that a little bit. But you do realize how it affects the character, but just, that should be another list for another day. The most songs, you know what I mean?
The ones that are so emotional, though, that get you. Speaking of which, one of the things, the reason why you were looking to come on to different shows, is other than the fact that you have the Tierra talk show, but you're working on an album of Disney covers right now. And I've been telling the Neverlanders about this, and we've had a link here in our show notes where hopefully some people have jumped on your crowdfunding, but tell us a little bit about this.
Oh, thank you again for having me, you know, first of all, because it's been one of those things where you want to get the word out about it. And I've never done a GoFundMe before. I've never done anything like this with an album. I just thought that it would be best at this point in the stage in life for me, particularly, I should do something that is out of the box that I really haven't gotten a chance to do and that I've always dreamed of. And that was recording an album or doing something professionally with songs that are really close to me. Now, I grew up with those cassette tapes and also of the Disney theme park music. And some of those attractions I never got to see in real life, like Horizons or World of Motion or the original Universe of Energy. But those songs were just always playing in the car, always playing on my little, you know, boombox, and I loved them. And it was just one of those things where they impacted me so much. I was like, you know what? Why don't I, you know, pay tribute to those Walt Disney World theme park songs that are never covered or have never been covered before ever, and really bring a different take to each one, but also bring in a couple collaborations. And so this was like just an idea in January of this past year, and then I really started moving forward in April. So I've been working, you know, effortlessly trying to put it together because it's just me. I'm doing everything except recording my own vocals. I am singing on it, of course, but the GoFundMe page is GoFundMe.com/TammyTucky. And on that page, you'll find out more information if you want to look at. There's a 2-minute video. I show you some home video clips of when I went to Disney World as for the first time as like a 1.5-year-old and a 2-year-old. And I just couldn't believe what I was seeing and how it impacted me and how I want to do this album. And, you know, I'm doing 3 different song collaborations. I can't talk today. I'm so sorry. I'm just so tired. It's been like one of those crazy weeks. I was telling Jeremy off the air. I'm like, I'm so sorry. One of the song collaborations is did you, Jeremy, get to see the American Adventure at Epcot?
No, because I've only been once back in 2009, and by the we did Epcot on the same day we'd went to Animal Kingdom, and by the time I got to Epcot, my feet were in pain, and we only got so far as Spaceship Earth and out to Maelstrom, and then we headed back to the hotel to rest our feet. And I think we did go back in the Magic Kingdom that night because it was near the end of our trip. It was just a 3 dip. Yeah, well, because it was a 3-day trip, and then we had to fly back the following morning. So we wanted to go back into Magic Kingdom one last time before we left the following day. So going and resting our feet and soaking in the pool over at the what was that? That was the retro. We were in the 60s area of the.
Was it the Pop Century?
Pop Century. That's okay. The one.
I was trying to remember too.
They had an original He-Man figure up on the wall, and I was like,
I've never been there before to Pop Century in particular. I wish I had gone to all the hotels.
It was nice.
I've heard great things about it. But the only reason I ask is it is a 40-minute show about the American about America's history over 200 span. So you guys would have loved it because it's air conditioned and it's a 40-minute show, so you get to sit and relax. Yeah. But it's a beautiful show, and there's a portion in the show called Two Brothers, and it's about. Two brothers, one's a Confederate soldier and one's a Union soldier, and they're part of a family, of course.
And cannonballs don't pay no mind.
Yes, basically, that's right. And yeah. And based on the song, of course, by Irving Gordon. And so the song was covered by a Disney cast member named Ali Olmo, and I miraculously found her a couple months back, got in touch with her, and I interviewed her, and I just thought, what if I got in contact with Ali after this interview and I pitched the idea to record this song 35 years later after she originally recorded it and recorded it as a duet this time.
Ooh.
And then flew her in to where I am based, and we'd actually film at an historic house that is known for battles that have happened on its grounds, and, you know, really have a beautiful tribute to this song and this piece in the show. And so I called her up, I explained to her, I said, I'd love to do this. And she's like, sure, I'd love to. And I kind of like fangirled. And then I was talking with a friend of ours who was in the Philadelphia Orchestra, and I found out through research, like tons of research about the show because I'm obsessed with it, is that the Philadelphia Orchestra actually recorded the backing tracks, the soundtrack for the attraction. So I just said to him in casual, I said, so Don, you know, apparently the Philadelphia Orchestra recorded the soundtrack in 82. Do you know anybody, like any of your friends who were involved in it? And he goes, oh, that was the first gig I ever had for Philadelphia Orchestra. I said, what? And he's like, yeah. And I said, you're kidding. He's like, no, that was my first gig working in the percussion area and the orchestra. And I said, that's unbelievable. I said, well, would you be willing to play the piano for our piece while Ali plays the guitar? She sings and I sing. And he's like, sure. So basically I have two original soundtrack album, individuals who were on the original soundtrack for this album of The American Adventure working on this one particular song out of the 7 on the album, cool. Which is crazy. So I'm so excited for that. And then there was a song. I wish, Jeremy, you had been to Epcot during the Millennium Celebration, because it was such a great time, because they had this whole extra building in Epcot where you could walk in. And there aren't, like, tons of pavilions for all countries. So in this building, they had separate sections for the countries. And the whole thing of it, the whole premise of it was to celebrate the future hand in hand. So working as a community of tons of individuals from different countries, and they had this beautiful parade called Tapestry of Nations, and the music's beautiful, and it was amazing. And that's what you saw, Illuminations, I'm assuming, the Epcot fireworks show, and that's what that came from.
I've seen video of it.
Oh no!
A single fireworks show actually. While we were there, when the fireworks were going, we took the opportunity to get on rides because everybody abandoned stuff. So we tried to ride everything we hadn't got to ride during the day.
Oh, I don't blame you, because I have a phobia of loud noises, so I don't actually watch the fireworks. I watch them online too, but I'm just saying the Illumination show was in collaboration with the Millennium Celebration. So there was this song called Celebrate the Future Hand in Hand, and it was like a gospel piece. Now, I love, my favorite short film of all time by Disney is John Henry.
Yeah.
And in 2000, it was actually, some of it was animated at the Hollywood Studios, MGM Studios, and I had interviewed the voice of John Henry, the singing voice of his wife Polly, and also Gary, who is the leader of the Sounds of Blackness, which is a Grammy award-winning group, a cappella group, and they've worked with so many people in the business, and they provided this gorgeous soundtrack to that short film. And I'd interviewed them already, like maybe a year and a half ago, and I called Gary up. I said, Gary, I have a song, and I'd really love to do a collaboration with you in the Sounds of Blackness. Would you guys be interested? He says, yes. And I was just like, oh my gosh. So I have two great song collaborations, and we've had a great cabaret night that happened in August. And the people who put that together, these talented individuals, it's like 15 of us, are going to actually record a Country Bears song that maybe you haven't heard, because there are three versions of the Country Bears show. There's the original version, the Christmas version, and the Summer Hoedown.
And I've heard all three.
Wow, okay, good.
I'm glad. I have a collection of Disney audio for, even though I haven't seen a lot of shows, I've got the audio.
I'm glad you do, because it's sometimes really hard to find them. So I'm glad you collect them. Because I do too.
Yeah, and it's like this underground thing where we all find these secret places to share our audio.
It's great, because it really does, you know, it's for hit. I believe we're saving it for the prosperity of, you know, future generations wanting to hear it. So, but I guess you know the song The Great Outdoors, and that one is like such a hoot. It's like a hoedown song. So those individuals from the cabaret night, plus like 25 other individuals, are all going to come in, and we're going to record a big group number in December of The Great Outdoors. And I was working with George Wilkins, the original song composer of the song, and he's done other Disney wonderful work for Disney before in the music department. And he's gotten me in touch with the original violinist who played the fiddle, that fancy fiddle part in the song, and so he might be coming on board to work with us too. So it's just this amazing way of really paying tribute to Walt Disney World and the music that I grew up with. So long story short, it's a crazy project. I'm so sorry, I'm running my mouth, but I'm just so excited for it, and there's so much going on, and I love to keep busy, and I we're hoping to have this out by March or April, the album, but it's going to take some time, because we need to pay for the equipment. Mm-hmm. We need to pay, of course, the people who appear in the album, who is, you know, those who are editing the album, and it's going to be a lot of time and money, and we've raised a good amount, but it would be great to have any support. You know, even $1 or $5 would really be appreciated, if anybody can. When we have the album out, it will be out, and I it's it's going to sound amazing. I know it is. I had doubts in myself personally because I was like, I really don't think I'm a good singer. And I was, I don't know why, I was just being such a Debbie Downer, and I shouldn't be, because I really want this project to work, and I've been working nonstop 110% just to pull it together. So, and it's so great to be on the show to talk a little bit about it. I really do appreciate it, Jeremy, because, you know, it's not easy to promote everything. You know what I mean?
Right. But I think I've still got the link in the show notes. If y'all have not checked it out when I told y'all to, I think your YouTube is just Tammy Tucky, right?
Yes, youtube.com/TammyTucky. I guess you're going to say that my Why Don't You Do Right, my Jessica Rabbit cover is at 2 million views right now. It's crazy.
Yeah, because you nailed it. Flat out nailed it. And I don't know if I've shared it yet with Scott from Disney Indiana is a huge Jessica Rabbit fan and loves that song to death. I don't know if I got to have him hear that if I haven't already, because you absolutely nailed it. So you're, you know, not feeling confident as a singer. Believe me, after I heard that, I was like, oh, yeah, this is going to be good. So
working hard. Yeah, I always have doubts. I guess that's what every performer does. Mm-hmm. I don't know about you, but I get so nervous for every interview, interview, because I think I'm not going to be good enough and be as, you know, entertaining or as helpful in asking great questions, because, you know, I do feel like people have certain standards and, you know, you try to reach them, and mm-hmm. sometimes they're a little bit too higher for what you feel like you can reach, but you know what I mean? So, but you know, it's always a work in progress, and you know, you grow as a person.
And sometimes you have a guest on and you just geek out about what they've done.
Oh, I can't help it. And then I listen to the editing. Oh my gosh, I can't stand it. That's why the worst part ever to edit, because I can't stand hearing my own voice. So good luck to you, Jeremy, because I don't need to edit this.
Well, the convenient thing is we're almost doing this in a live fashion, which that's conveniently, I have just a little button I have to click right here, and we're going to wind up in the Neverland Trailer Park.
Oh, cool. I'm all great. Let's do it.
One more time. It don't matter what you look like. It don't. Nobody gonna sing with me. Okay.
The Neverland Trailer Park.
See how simple that is? And then with another quick clip, I did not know this was coming. I was so surprised by this when this came out. But we've got a brand new trailer for Black Panther, and Tammy hasn't gotten to see it yet.
Nope.
So,
nope,
and
not
you're
yet.
Seeing my screen. We're ready to rock this thing?
Yes, let's do it.
All right, here goes.
I have seen gods fly. I've seen men build weapons that I couldn't even imagine.
Uh-huh.
I've seen aliens drop from the sky.
Yeah.
But I have never seen anything like this. How much more are you hiding?
Hola. Let's go. Go.
My son, it is your time.
Show me my respect and bow down.
You get to decide what kind of king you are going to be. Don't freeze.
I never freeze.
The revolution will not be televised.
Show me my respect. And bow down. We own ya. We own ya. We only getting started now. Cause we own ya. Everybody think they know me now. Cause we own ya. You and I, my homie. Cause we own ya.
I waited my entire life for this. The world's gonna start over. I'ma burn it all.
What happens now determines what happens to the rest of the world.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out.
Wakanda
forever! The revolution will not be televised.
Let's have some fun.
The revolution will be live.
Oh, Oh, yes. Now, unfortunately for the listeners, this is a lot of music, so you don't get a whole perspective of what all is going on. But visually, this is a treat.
I would agree. I'm not a big superhero person. I'm not always going in to see the films. I will honestly admit that. But because I have no idea who the Black Panther is, first of all. I never read the comics. So this is coming from somebody who only saw him through I think it was Avengers 2, right? Or was it Captain America versus Iron Man?
Right, it was Civil War. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. That's how I met him. And I was intrigued because I didn't know where this character was coming from. I didn't know what they were, you know, setting up for. So I really do think that this can be like a different avenue for a type of superhero movie, because we always see the ones where it's like one group versus one group, you know what I mean? And then the really dark films, and then the really fun films like Guardians of the Galaxy, and they're really a mixture of both, but, you know, R-rated like Deadpool. So mm-hmm. It's interesting to see that this is going to be its own thing, of course. And I honestly, for me, I don't think we need like Iron Man or Captain America or any of them showing up in this. I think it would be great to just see Black Panther. Only Black Panther and the other individuals. I would assume that there's going to be some villains. It looked like Andy right. Serkis. I love him for doing Gollum in Lord of the Rings. He yep. looks like he's going to be a bad guy.
Yes.
And I think it was Angela Bassett. She looks like she's going to be Black Panther's mother, and mm-hmm. I loved her in Akila and the Spelling Bee a long time ago when I saw that. You know, such a big fan of all these individuals that are listed, and it looks like some of them have never been like in a lead role before. And you know, I guess that's another thing, because you know, we as a society always have films that just have a lot of Caucasian individuals, and this is like an all-star cast of African-American individuals. I'm so excited because it looks great, and technically, visually, it looks fantastic. So I'm interested in the storyline because we don't really know too much, and I'm actually glad about that because I want to go in not knowing anything because I don't really know who Black Panther is.
Yeah, I wasn't really that familiar with the character other than, you know, I am not a major comic book reader, but I've been a Marvel guy nearly my entire life. But mainly I'm a Spider-Man guy with some occasional lapses into X-Men. And so Black Panther I had heard of, but I didn't really get exposed to it until back when Disney first bought Marvel and they produced a series called Avengers Earth's Mightiest Heroes, which was fantastic. And it brought in Black Panther, and I started to learn about the character and all the amazing technology that Wakanda had that they just keep hidden away, like this little utopia hidden away in Africa that they keep everybody out of because they're afraid of, mainly because of what the outsiders could do with some of the technology they have in Wakanda and with vibranium. You know, if that's used for the wrong things, that it could be disastrous, much like Captain Ahab on the or Captain Nemo, rather, on the Nautilus. He's got this great technology he's developed, and he seems villainous in some fashions when you watch 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. But you realize he's kind of right that if people got a hold of the technology he's developed, the things that they would do with it is entirely different from what he's trying to do. And they would just bring destruction. And so Wakanda is kept very separate and guarded from the rest of the world. So as you could kind of see in this trailer, there's like this little force field of vision where you don't necessarily see. It just looks like, you know, kind of open area. And then you go through this force field and boom, there's this city there. And so you've got T'Challa, who is now king of Wakanda. And that makes him the official Black Panther, the guardian of Wakanda. And so, of course, now you saw Ulysses Klaue in Avengers Age of Ultron. That's Andy Serkis, which I love him not just for Lord of the Rings, but also from these rebooted Planet of the Apes films as Caesar. He is fantastic. And it's nice.
Wait, Klaue was in another film?
Yes, Ulysses Klaue. Yes, you saw him in Avengers Age of Ultron. Did you see that one?
No, I didn't even see that one. See, I am so awful. I apologize. I'm really coming in from I really need to watch the films from Civil War on out because I haven't really seen those. The only one I've seen recently was Wonder Woman. So I didn't even know he was in that. I actually now want to watch it because I love Andy Serkis.
Yeah. And Wonder Woman, of course, though, is not a Marvel film. It's DC, but we still love that movie too.
I know. Yeah, I know that. I was just saying the only super movie superhero movie I've seen in a long time.
Wow.
Was that one. So I need to really catch up on my game here.
So did you, at least you got to see where Martin Freeman has now come in.
Yes, as I did. I do know him. Yeah.
Okay. So we get to see him there in the beginning of this trailer. And I am not very familiar with Eric Killmonger, who is our main villain, played by Michael B. Jordan. Now, the one thing I find interesting is he's got a lot of the tribal kind
Michael
of
Michael B. Jordan?
Mm-hmm. Michael B. Jordan is Eric Killmonger, which I don't know. I don't know anything about him. Claw, I'm familiar with. And we saw him lose his arm in Avengers Age of Ultron. It's going to be replaced by this vibranium sonic weapon, which we do kind of get to see him fire a little bit. So Eric Killmonger, I guess he's supposed to be from Wakanda. The one thing that's kind of weird for me is everybody has got a very South African accent going on, mm-hmm. except for Eric Killmonger is very American style.
Yes,
so I'm kind of wondering what the deal is with that, if that's intentional, that maybe he's been in America that long, and maybe he was outcast from Wakanda for something bad he had done before. I'm mm-hmm. not sure. But also in the cast, we've got Forrest Whitaker. Gotta love him. And mm-hmm. Lupita, and I can never say her name right, Nyong'o, which I believe she was in Star Wars, The Force Awakens, as...
Correct, yeah.
I cannot think of the name of the character. She owned the whole thing.
She was like the B. Arthur of...
Maz Kanata.
Of the, yeah.
Maz Kanata. And also Raksha in The Jungle Book. She was in that Queen of Katwe, another Disney film that I didn't see. Looked like it was a chess
She
thing.
Actually is from my area. She used to take acting lessons at, oh gosh, I think it's the People Light and Theater Company. And they were mentioning her. I think this is around the time of 12 Years a Slave. So she is from my area, which is, you know, pretty great. You know, she used to live around here. I don't know if she was born here. I'm not quite sure. But
yeah,
I thought she was amazing.
English accent, so who knows?
Yes. She's amazing, though. I think she's so super talented, and I loved seeing her at the Academy Awards that one year when she had like that Cinderella dress on. It was gorgeous on her. She looked fantastic, and she had a great speech.
Yep, and we got some brief glimpses of a lot of these cast members in this trailer. Overall, this just adds to my excitement. I've been wanting to see more of this character, especially after Civil War. Chadwick Boseman has been fantastic as the character so far, so I'm very excited to see where they take it. I hope that one day we can bring the Merry Mutants back into the Marvel Universe, because for a brief time, T'Challa married Aurora Monroe, also known as Storm of the X-Men. I would like to see
that. I wonder, do you think that they'll ever have a collaboration of Avengers and X-Men at some point? Because I know they've been rebooting it. And
yeah. Well, Fox, I think, is still a little mad that they've lost one of their biggest franchises in the name of Star Wars. Although they still have all release rights to the original film, they've pretty much lost most of their bread money here between all those other Star Wars films. And all any further Star Wars films, of course, Disney's going to release completely themselves. Mm-hmm. So
hopefully the bad blood will kind of simmer down, because honestly, when you can put your differences aside on those types of issues, you can really open up doors to a new age of films. You know what I mean? I think like this superhero era is just, I think it, I believe it started with Iron Man. That was like that was one of the things that just made a little spark, a little ripple, and boom, there we go. There it goes.
Take it back even further to where we really went crazy for this was with that original Sam Raimi Spider-Man film. Came at just the right time when the world was still reeling from 9/11, and we needed superheroes at that time. And that followed with Lord of the Rings. Suddenly, that's when the geeks took over Hollywood, and that just primed everything for when Iron Man to hit. Boom, it was on fire. It was already set.
That's true. Yeah, I will agree with that too. Yeah.
Yep. It was when Generation X, like me, when we became adults, we wanted this kind of movie. And so now a lot of these reboots that you're getting, even cartoons, are made by fans of the original runs. And it just makes beautiful stuff on TV. So
I can only imagine how happy they must be, the fans, to actually be a part of the TV shows. You know, that's the dream job. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
See, I hope we get to do the dream job of bringing Hook to the stage. You know what I mean? Like,
heck,
wouldn't
yes.
that be crazy?
It's too bad that I'm too old to play Peter Pan, because I was born for that role. And
aww.
I will play a heck of a good Captain Hook, though.
Oh, that would be cool. Or Mr. Smead. He has, like, a lot of fun stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I just want to be one of the mermaids, okay?
There you go. There you go.
The cool mermaid.
Which one was the cool one? I thought they were all pretty cool.
I like the blue one. I guess I like the blue. I don't know, because she laughed underwater. But I don't want to be, like, favoritism, because I interviewed all three of them for the Hook podcast I did. And they had not talking. Oh, my Lord. They had not talked together in a long time. And it was great to have them all three on the call. I was, like, geeking out, because even though that scene is, like, 40, 50 seconds long with them, they had other things they had filmed, because they filmed a scene with Bob Hoskins and other stuff that was cut. Because there was so much of that film, not to get onto a tangent, but, you know, that film has a lot of hidden treasures and gems that have never been uncovered yet. So I know Spielberg, it doesn't sound like he's a fan of it. He didn't like how the outcome came, and he got a lot of flack for it. But, I wish I could just talk him into, you know, just looking back at it and really, you know, understanding why it's appreciated, because I feel like he feels like he might have let people down for it. I'm like, no, you did it. You did a really good job. You know what I mean?
I loved it from the first time I saw it.
Totally different.
Yeah. But I think it's time we go to a party.
Ooh, what type of party? An unbirthday party?
The Neverland Podcast.
Peter, how do you get to Neverland?
NeverlandPodcast.com. Well, despite what our little sweeper says, this is a Halloween party, so things are going to be a little bit scary. As y'all know, we have been having a party here through the entire month of October. Well, except for that very first one where we just had Dr. Jeff Barnes, but that was still a party in and of itself. It was 200 episodes, so that was cool. But since then, we've had other podcast friends come along, and they're bringing their music in here. We're DJing this party. We're playing all the greatest Halloween songs anyone has ever heard in their lives. Am I right? It's been the case. So now Tammy is here, and she's brought five songs of her own to share.
Yes, I'm excited.
So this is great. So we've been talking music pretty much this entire show here, because of course all the other music. But now we get to finally turn that corner. But here's the nice thing, because last week I know we really pushed it. We were diving right into some straight up horror stuff, and we really didn't get any Disney in there. So hopefully all of you are feeling much better now. We have Disneyed you to death. And now we're taking it right back down to Horror Street. Although we've got some Disney influence in it this time, so. Yeah. This is going to be a good list, but well, of course, guest gets to go first.
Okay. Let's see. This one is called "Bump of the Night," and it was sung by All Stars. And I don't think a lot of people have heard of it, because it was involved in the Scooby-Doo movie that came out in 2003, and it was only on that album. I'm not saying that, you know, that's where I heard it from in the movie, and I loved it, you know what I mean? And the movie was very popular, but I'm saying that the group, I don't think, has done anything really since then, and the song really never hit the airwaves, but gosh, it is just so much fun, and you know, it's like poppy, but it you could definitely tell it's a 2000s song. So Jeremy, whenever you want to, you could take it away.
You cannot run and you cannot hide. Yeah, you gotta face it, baby. Things go bump, bump, bump in the night. You cannot hide it. Yeah.
Face it, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Oops, there we go. A little preview of what's coming next. Yeah, I was not familiar with that song, but now, was this from the very first Scooby-Doo film, live action?
Correct, yes. The one with like Freddie Prinze Jr. and Sarah Michelle Gellar. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's actually really good.
We'll not agree on that one.
Oh, no, not that. I how sometimes you grew up with movies that a lot of people don't like?
Mm-hmm.
That's me with, like, the Haunted Mansion Disney film, Scooby-Doo. There's other films, too. And I don't want to be mean and just say, oh, they're horrible. You know what I mean? I like them.
Yeah.
But I was meaning to say I really love the song. I think it's really good. So.
Yeah, because I grew up watching the original 60s series Scooby-Doo.
Oh, me too. Little,
and
me
I
too.
Loved it to death. And then I was so excited. Oh, a live action movie of Scooby-Doo. And okay, granted, in the 60s, there's some sort of accidental bits. Like I've actually seen at one point where they see a crack in the concrete and Fred says, well, as Shaggy would say, follow that crack. And it's supposed to have been like it was drug humor to people now, but it wasn't meant to be. And the live action pushed the drug humor to intentional levels and ruined the innocence and fun to me of what that should have been. And I was really disturbed by it. And then to have Scrappy do as the villain, I'm sorry, spoilers. I was like, what are you guys
doing? Well, don't read about what the original script was going to be, because that was written by James Gunn and he had a whole different thing going. It was going to be even a lot more adult humor than what you think it is. So I think, honestly, what people like most about the movie, and I think that's why it's still, like, in some ways people just go back or drawn to it, is the cast, because they do really great. They do a really great job playing their characters.
That's,
you know,
true.
What I mean?
That's
and,
true.
And Matthew Lillard is still Shaggy. He is the voice of Shaggy now.
Yeah.
So, like, you would never. It. You would never think it. And also, if you want to see something really cool, they deleted Velma actually had her own song. She thought she was drunk on some alcohol, but they weren't alcoholic drinks. And she sings, "You're just too good to be true."
Oh.
And it's this amazing, like, Linda Cardellini can sing. Like, you need to watch it. It's actually really good. It should have stayed in the movie. That's how good it is. So. Mm.
Well, while we're talking about weird things and groups doing odd things, have you ever heard of the Aquabats?
No, I have not.
I'm about to educate you, my dear. Okay.
Please.
They even had a show on The Hub. Did you remember that network before it became Discovery Kids?
Correct.
The Aquabats Super Show. The Aquabats, though, have been around since the 90s. They were kind of a ska band, but they've kind of gone a bit more surf rock, and now their music is just whatever is fun. They'll do anything. But the gimmick of the Aquabats is that they are superheroes. And when you go to one of their concerts, randomly somewhere in the concert, some weird villain will come out and attack them and try to stop the show or get them to sell out. And I've been there one time that they had the evil condiment men came out, and there was a mustard, a ketchup, and a mayonnaise guy that came out to stop the show. And they sprayed the crowd with mustard, mayonnaise, and stuff like that. And I actually got mayonnaise in my camera bag. But
oh, my gosh.
It was so funny. But basically, if you like Weird Al Yankovic, all his original songs that he does that sometimes are even better than his parodies, imagine a band that all did songs like that.
Mm-hmm.
That they're all that level of comedy, and they have weird science fiction themes, and they've done stuff like The Cat with Two Heads, a song, one of their villains is Powdered Milk Man, because if you've ever had powdered milk and tried to eat it with cereal, it's awful, you know, stuff like that. So they're really fun. They have a song about a pool party, about pizza day, just fun stuff. And a few years ago, they put out an album called Charge, and even a music video, which is pretty hilarious, and it's a little bit of parody on some people who basically, they spend a lot of money in these outrageous fashions, and like in some fashions they seem to be goofing on the goth look, because they seem to put a lot of money into looking like they're dead, and they refer to them as fashion zombies.
Don't dress in expensive fashions to look like they crawled out of coffins, and who can blame them? They walk through asphalt cemeteries. It's zombie fashions. They must have been born that way. So can you hear me? Can you get hip to what I'm saying? These fashion zombies don't want this world alone.
It keeps jumping ahead on me, doggone thing.
No, it's okay. That sounds interesting. I wasn't really into to a lot of the rock scene when I was younger, but like I'm slowly getting into how, you know, different types of bands, and I'm really digging that sound.
Oh yeah, the Aquabats are fantastic. They haven't put out a new album in a little while. Even on their last album though, they did a song dedicated to the Luck Dragon in Neverending Story. So all just fun stuff that they do. They're currently, I think they are still touring. For a while they did have a YouTube channel. They were doing some different things. But if you can find, if Netflix still has it, they did have the first season at least of the Aquabats Super Show. And it was a lot of weird, quirky kind of fun. Basically, it's if you took somewhere with a goofy Japanese anime and like old B-movie horror or science fiction and threw them together with some wacky superhero people, that's pretty much the level of fun that they brought around. And it's just silly. So, yeah. And, of course, it's a zombie song in the end.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Those zombie songs, if you know what I mean.
Exactly. So, and the video is really hilarious because it's you know, the Aquabats are called into emergency and they're driving like an ambulance that's modified. It has the Aquabat symbol on there. And they go off to fight these gangs of weird fashioned type people that are fighting each other. And in the end, unfortunately, the Aquabats get taken by the zombies and become fashion zombies themselves. It's,
oh, my gosh.
It's a lot of fun. You can find it on YouTube. But I absolutely love the Aquabats.
Oh, God. Well, I'm going to check out that song when we kind of wrap it up because, goodness gracious, that actually sounds pretty cool. Uh-huh. So I'm excited to hear the whole thing.
Oh, yes. And once you get hooked on the Aquabats, you're going to be laughing your way through their entire catalog.
I'm excited. Yeah, I love anything that's kind of like, you know, tongue-in-cheek. So totally up my alley.
And this is actually the lead singer and songwriter for the Aquabats actually created Yo Gabba Gabba.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And actually, the Aquabats have appeared on Yo Gabba Gabba a couple of times.
I'm shocked. I didn't know that.
Oh, yes. It's this entire hidden empire that only few of us know about. And now you know it, too, so you are in the club.
Oh, boy.
You can become one of the cadets.
I had no idea. Well, then now I'm going to look at that in a different way when I'm babysitting my cousins and watching the show.
Oh, yeah.
So yep, I used to watch the show occasionally when I babysat them, but sometimes I babysit other people and their kids, and so they would have different shows on, and I did like the music aspect of that show, so I haven't seen it in a while, but maybe next time, you never know.
Yeah. So what's next on your list?
Next on my list. Okay, so I love The Haunted Mansion, as most of us do, so I kind of didn't want to go right for the main thing, Grim Grinning Ghosts.
Right.
I've never gone to this attraction before in person, but I've watched a video on it, and I'm entranced by it because I totally want to be able to go to Disneyland Paris and ride Phantom Manor, which has a different storyline to Haunted Mansion. It's about a bride who's been waiting for her groom, who obviously probably might have been killed by some phantom, and there's
apparently
this beautiful theme. Yeah, apparently either
her
father or some other devil-like creature.
Yeah.
But she has this sad, you know, theme that is similar to the original Haunted Mansion theme written by John Debney, who a lot of us know for doing the soundtrack to Hocus Pocus. I interviewed him, too, on the Tierra Talk show, if you want to take a listen to that. And also, the soloist of Melanie is Catherine Lynch Myring, and so she plays Melanie Ravenwood, and I interviewed her as well. So she got to go and record with this huge orchestra, which is what she was telling me, and it's beautiful. So go ahead and take it away.
I gotta say, this absolutely gives me chills when I listen to it.
It's one of those, it's so pure, like her voice is so pure against the horror of the theme itself, and I've always wanted to cover that one too, you know, it's just one of those things, it's so pretty, and her voice is stunning. I'm kind of surprised I haven't heard it on its own album. I'm like, go, Catherine, go! Record your own, you know, material, and she performs as an actress, so I hope I get to hear her again soon at some point, but definitely check it out if you're, and check out the ride, you know what I mean? Like, you can watch a ride through of it. It's not going to be as good as being there, but it's something totally different.
Yeah, it's very beautifully done, and the orchestration, it's still Grim Grinning Ghosts underneath, but it's got so much going on top of it now that it, oh, wow. When I first heard it from, like, the 30th anniversary Haunted Mansion album, and I heard that entire run-through, even with the Vincent Price, I was like, oh my gosh, I didn't know it was like this. I totally want to see this now. And because it's beautiful and gothic and scary and still sends chills down me when they get in where she starts even singing along with the Grim Grinning Ghost theme there at the end of it. I'm like, oh, wow.
It's like that. It you can't help it. And and also a note there, they kind of combined both the Haunted Mansion story and the Big Thunder Mountain Railroad together in this part of the park. So read into it, because it's fascinating, because you don't know for sure if it's maybe her father is the Phantom or another evil spirit. I love reading into it, the history into it. I think there's a documentary online about it too. So
yeah, I've seen some ones where they went into the story because they were supposed to be, the mine was on Indian territory and the Indians had cursed them, and this earthquake happened and killed everybody in the town. And so the bride was actually going to marry her sweetheart that her father didn't approve of, and the ghost of her father showed up, says, "No, you will not marry him. In fact, I want you to join me in death," and murders the husband, or the fiancé. And the bride never knows, and she wanders the house wondering whatever happened to him, and where is he at the wedding. And all of her wedding guests turn out to all show up, and they're all dead and ghosts. And so it, you know, drives her to her own grave. And the way I've kind of imagined the bride when I look at it is it's almost, you know, you hear like the haunting stories where a ghost is supposed to be reliving their final day over and over again. And that's the way I take that ride, is like they're presenting a story of like, you're going to see this story as she's reliving it in her death and as in her ghosthood, you know, over and over again, reliving this horrible tragedy. So, it's a very spooky, spooky type of ride. And I really want to check it out one of these days.
She's haunted by that creature in the darkness. And I think maybe that segues into your next song, is it?
Oh, yes. It almost does. Are you a bit of a gamer?
Yeah, in a way, yeah, definitely. I like trying anything. I try my best. I'm more of an arcade girl, but I try, you know, the Game Boys. That was a long time ago. I try more of the other games that they have out there now, best I can. You know, I'm not that good, but...
Well, back on the old PlayStation 1, now there had been a series called Alone in the Dark. They were mainly computer games, and then Resident Evil came along and really set the standard for a survival horror game. Well, the makers of Alone in the Dark decided they needed to step up their game and made Alone in the Dark a New Nightmare and reformatted their style of gameplay to more match something close to Resident Evil. And this game, you pretty much wander around the dark with nothing but a flashlight as these horrible monsters suddenly can appear, and this game would mess with you psychologically and would occasionally jump scare, just flash an enemy right there on screen and then it would be gone and thunder would roll and because nothing was there. This game messed with me so much that my wife got into it with the story, and we would, you know, I'd be playing it, we'd be watching it together. But this messed with me so much that I was in, you know, that what I call la-la land of almost asleep, but just a little bit awake. I was lying in bed there, and I swore some horrible creature jumped up over the side of from my wife's side of the bed up to the bed, and I hopped up hollering bloody murder, like I had to fight this thing off before it killed us or something. And, of course, nothing was really there. But that's the game had affected my brain and to where, you know, monsters were attacking me when I was trying to fall asleep. But in the credits of this is a wonderful song simply called Alone in the Dark. And what's cool about this is, all right, Stuart Copeland, the percussionist from The Police from back in the 80s. And also Jimmy Wood from Imperial Crowns, which I'm not familiar with him at all. Although I suspect I've heard his voice in some other songs. I don't know if it's not, but I was just playing through Injustice the other day again. And the credits, I sounded like his voice a little bit in a song that runs during the credits of that. But so this is a really great, you know, sometimes video games have really good songs. I mean, even Prince of Persia, The Sands of Time, the ending song on that is fantastic. But this song has become part of my Halloween set after I found it online, because it's really good. I guess there's nothing left to do but to play it. And the verses are even scary because it's talking about, well, something is in here, something is clutching for my, is close enough to feel my breath, something is in here, did something move, something is clutching for my death. It's all these scary things, but then I love the last verse of it, but somewhere inside the light goes on because I know the night will be long, but it will be long to those who can take up the tools to tear down the darkness. And it's like this great
thing in goodness.
It's like, lyrically, it's even really good, and it has this scary panic of, no, not this darkness, and, it's...
I think that's... I loved it. It sounded like it had a real nice 80s feel to it.
Yes, well, Stuart Copeland.
Dare I say? I love it.
Yeah. See, I ever since I when I first heard it on the game, I was like, this song's amazing. So I had to track it down online, and luckily I found it. So now every Halloween, I got to fire it up. I'm like, yeah, that's right. This is great. So. Yeah, my nerd flag flies. I pull music from games. I even from my Halloween collection.
I didn't even think about that because are some games that I feel like I see. I'm looking back now. I'm like, I probably would have added a little bit of a song here and there, that type of thing. It's kind of hard to stick to a five song list. You know what I mean? Yeah, I know how tough it is.
Well, and otherwise we'd have a 2-hour show.
I know. Well, the next one I have on my list is the Ghost and Mr. Chicken theme song by Victor Mizzy. And a lot of people know him for doing the actual theme song to The Addams Family, you know, dun-dun-dun-dun. So I could have chosen that one, of course, but the Ghost and Mr. Chicken, I feel, is just a fun, groovy 60s, 70s type of theme that you don't really hear nowadays. And of course it's Don Knotts, and it matches his personality. So there you go.
And no one can see me doing my little groove dancing over here because I actually was just watching that. It was part of Sven Gulli was actually showing this last weekend.
Oh, was he? Okay. Yep. Well, I just thought we had just seen it. My dad and I, we had seen it years ago, but we introduced it to a couple of our friends last year, and we just could not stop laughing. We had a great time with the movie, watching it together. And whenever something goes wrong, we like to play that song, you know, dun dun, womp womp, womp womp, you know, like that type of thing. So we like it. It's a great tune.
Yeah,
so.
And that's the thing is you got like this really scary element of the film where it's like supposed to be this haunted house and this horrible. Grizzly double murder has gone on or whatever, but anytime Don Knotts is going in about to be scared by something, da-dun, 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 you know, it gets
it's
goofy.
Like a Scooby-Doo episode. Wasn't he on Scooby-Doo at some point?
Yes, he was.
Okay, that's what I was
doing,
like,
the guest star stuff.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I faintly remember him being in one of the episodes, and then another one, Sandy Duncan. Like, goodness gracious, I want to watch them all again.
Yes, great stuff. And what's creepy, although, so it's like you go from that happy thing, and then they have that organ music where it's dur 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 dur, or the organ is playing by itself.
It's creepy.
And the blood won't wash off the organ. So yeah, it's like it's perfect Halloween movie because it's got that scary, but it's got that light humor fun. I love that movie. It is a great one.
It is. I love it too.
Speaking of other movies that I do enjoy is The Nightmare Before Christmas, which it took me a while to really appreciate the movie because I had such high expectations when I first saw it because everybody was like, oh, it's such a masterpiece movie. And so I had hyped it up in my head really big that I'd hyped it up so far that when I first saw it, it didn't live up to what the hype had been. And I ended up falling asleep during it. But as I've watched every year I go in and watch it again. I'm like, you know what? This has a great dark sense of humor. This movie's really funny. And I've enjoyed it more and more every year that I watch it. And one year I happened to find there's a double soundtrack where you have the regular soundtrack of the film and then you have Nightmare Remastered as a second disc where a bunch of other artists recorded songs. And we talked about this earlier in the month as we played Marilyn Manson's version of This Is Halloween. And in a similar
I've heard that one. I love that one too.
Well, if you haven't heard this one, this is Kidnap the Santa Claus of all groups by Korn. And oh my gosh, they nailed it.
Best we're going to set some bait inside a nasty trap and wait. When he comes a-sniffing, we will snap the trap and close the gate.
Wait, I've got a better plan to catch this big red lobster man. Let's pop him in a boiling pot, and when he's done, we'll butter him up.
Kidding him to Santa Claus, throw him in a box. Bury him for 90 years, then say him they pot.
And the really cool thing about that is the guitars are even trying to match the orchestration in it.
Yes, you can hear the quality, and they had fun with this. You know, when you're asked to cover a Disney song or just a song in general from a film you love, you're going to like give even more and put even more effort into it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So you could tell that they were having a ball because that is such a catchy song. You know what
yes,
I mean?
Yes, it is. And even when it first kicks up, because it starts out, which is the actual, you know, the music from the movie. But then when they kick off and they hit the major guitars and they're going, la, 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 they go for it. And it's like, this is awesome. So I would actually like to go through and recut the audio a little bit in the movie and just integrate some of the songs from the Revisited into the film because I think they would still match perfectly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just for a different take on it, especially because, and I hope this comes up later this month. I'm hoping on Heather's list she'll have this. Heather's my wife, by the way. We call her the Wendy Nerd. But I love what Amy Lee from Evanescence did with Sally's song. And I almost put it on my list, but I was saving it because I thought my wife would put it on here on our next episode. So I hope she's got it on her list. But it is gorgeous what she did with that song.
It is. That one is really pretty, too. Yes, mm-hmm. I agree.
Love it, love it, love it.
Yeah, I'll explain with my very last song, but I'm going to, with the next one, again, I'm going to refer back to The Haunted Mansion 2003. Not the most popular Disney attraction adaption to movie and film.
It's still fun, though.
I really like it. I have interviewed Nathaniel Parker, Master Gracie, Dina cool. Waters, who was the maid in it, Emma the maid, Marcia Thomason, and she played Master Gracie's long-lost love, and Sarah Evers. And I have another upcoming guest, too. And also Don Hahn, the producer. So, you know, I really do appreciate this film. The quality in the sets and costumes is just fantastic.
Yeah.
And you know, I feel like if they had given it a chance maybe later down the line, they maybe would have given it more leeway to be a little bit more scarier. But other than that, I really love this score. I kind of wish, you know how they incorporated the Hans Zimmer extra tracks and from the Pirates of the Caribbean into the attraction mm-hmm. and outside of it, I really do wish, I know it sounds horrible, oh, how dare they remove the original soundtrack of Haunted Mansion. I do feel like the quality of this soundtrack for the film is worthy enough to incorporate outside of the mansion and yeah. possibly inside the mansion, but that's just me. So why don't you guys make your decision? Here's a little bit of the theme from the film. And a fun fact about that is the album was never officially released.
Yeah.
So finding them. Yeah, it's online. And that's why I was shocked because I was like, oh my gosh, this album is, the music quality is gorgeous. And I will tell you, my secret guest is Mark Mancina. And he was the orchestrator to that. And you know him from Moana and mm-hmm. other Disney films he's done, Brother Bear, Tarzan. But he said that they really went all out to get an orchestra, a really nice orchestra, a nice area to record, a nice sound studio, basically, to record this track. And they really, they didn't need to. And they did go for it. And I'm glad they did because it adds another element to it. And I think it does help the film in a great way. So there we go. That's my soapbox. You know, mentioning, naming, and everything.
Yeah, and even for people who really don't like the movie, and it's not great, but it's still fun. But the opening of it with the music and the tarot card is gorgeous. And I love the darker and scarier version of Grim Grinning Ghost that they managed to do at the beginning, where you hear the oh my gosh.
It's so good. And you know, ooh. I think a lot of people don't realize like they deal with a serious touchy subject of race in the film.
Yeah,
I know
they
do. It's not like completely brought to life, but you know, I in you know, in a lot of other films they they really talk a lot more about it, which I understand. And this is a kids movie, so you can only kids don't really see race, you know what I mean? So I understand what they were doing, but they do bring it into this aspect of the film. And I always say, you know, you don't really have an African American family featured in a horror film because, you know, those silly tropes, you know, the girl runs down the hallway, she always gets killed, or, you know, it's, you know, the African American side character never gets to live as long, you know, that type of thing. But it really shuts that down in this film. If you think about it, you know, they all survive.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert. But, and, you know, and it's great because you get that dynamic, and Eddie Murphy, he's just funny. I just love him. You know what I mean? And so, yeah, there are good things about the film, and I really like it. So yeah. There you go.
You got to focus on what's good about the film and kind of overlook when the things that kind of lapse. Because the first time I saw it, I thought, you know what, well, this is a fun film. And it wasn't until, you know, like a few other viewings, like, yeah, this isn't everything I would want it to be, but it's enough to where I can still enjoy it as a fan of the attraction. And the sets are gorgeous. The house is fantastic. I love a good movie set haunted house, like the remake of The Haunting. I love their sets on that as well.
Gosh, yeah, they're beautiful and gorgeous. Mm-hmm. I think it's like that appreciation for it because not all of it was CGI.
Yeah.
And another thing is, if you would have been at Walt Disney World around 2003, you would have been able to see the set yourself at the studios because they recreated it, and it was gorgeous. They had the organ from the organ room, some of the sets and props and dresses and costumes and that type of thing. So, and I saw it once, and I faintly remember it. I have found a video clip of it. I'll have to send it to you. But, like, you know, that appreciation and work, and there's so much hype that went into that. Captain Nemo's couch is in Master Gracie's what's
den
it called
or whatever. Yeah,
basically, it's in there. It's that red, beautiful couch that they reused. So that's pretty cool too.
Yeah, it is.
And that,
that's what's great about these haunted house type movies is how they can do this dark beauty where the house is beautiful but yet scary looking at the same time. I love that.
And the secret passageways.
Yes. See, that's when I become wealthy and famous, you know, because that's what Neverland's going to do for me. So, I'm going to build a house like that has that beauty but scariness to it, just so I can invite people over for Halloween parties and have the coolest party ever.
Oh, ditto. That would be so much fun.
And then, of course, when you decorate it for Christmas, your house is beautiful anyway. So when you decorate it for Christmas, it'll just be even more beautiful. Like, I even love the house from the Casper live action film.
That was actually really great too. You know, I guess the quality is just so rich in detail. It makes you appreciate the work that goes into that. And you know, the tomb scene too. When I watch it, you know, I'm having fun. I am scared with those zombies and everything in that tomb and the makeup. Oh my gosh, because I know the makeup artist, I forget his name, I apologize to him, but he's well known for his zombie films that he has done with makeup. So when they snagged him for the film, everybody was like, wow, great, cool, you know what I mean? So,
and they were some scary zombies, that's true.
Oh boy, they were. I did not like that scene. I was like, no.
Yeah. See, they still have some scares in that movie. It's just maybe they needed a few more to make everybody happy, I guess. So
yeah, I guess they could have. I would have, if they would have gone the Pirates route and made it PG-13, yes. You know what I mean?
Well, maybe Guillermo del Toro will go that way for us.
You never know. Let's see.
Let's see. But speaking of a movie that's funny and yet has some good scary moments, and including the what I call Ghostbusters 3, but it's the video game, has really scary moments in it. But this song is, other than Monster Mash, this is the granddaddy, although it's not my number one on my list. This is like the granddaddy of Halloween songs for one of my favorite movies ever. And I don't even have to say the name of it. When I hit this button and you hear this, you'll know what it is.
Something strange in your neighborhood. Who you gonna call?
Ghostbusters! Everybody sing along. Here we go.
Something weird and it don't look good. Who you gonna call?
Ghostbusters!
Yes. I ain't afraid of no ghosts.
And of course, we're familiar with the Ray Parker Jr. song. But now the fun part about that song, when you listen to it back to back with Huey Lewis's I Want a New Drug. See, the story goes, they wanted Huey Lewis to do music for Ghostbusters, but he turned it down. But they still really wanted the feel of a Huey Lewis song. And so when you hear it, you can kind of hear, do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. It's very similar to I Want a New Drug. It's like the same chord progression and everything. And so there was actually a lawsuit between Huey Lewis and Ray Parker Jr. over this song.
Oh, boy, I didn't even know about that.
Yeah, and I was so amazed when I first heard it. I went and I listened to I Want a New Drug, and then I went and listened to Ghostbusters, and I was like, oh, my gosh, you can hear it. It's there. So I don't know how the lawsuit actually finally went across, but I have a feeling Huey Lewis may have won it and got a little bit of royalties on the song. But the song Ghostbusters still remains popular, and even with the new movie that was gosh-awful, there's some pretty cool covers of the song, about two or three different covers, I think, even. That are
Yeah, I did hear
good.
Them. Mm-hmm. I thought, like, the intro cover that they had for the film, the newer version, was, like, great because it led up to this crazy scare, and then there was really nothing, you know, that happened. But I did like those new covers, but gosh, this original one is the best. It you know what genius. I mean? I just remember going to the Halloween parades at the school, and when this song came on, oh, I was grooving. I have, like, a dance for it. Yes, I love it. It's my favorite.
All right, now we're ready for our number one picks. And I say every time, I should have come up with a fanfare for this. So all I get is da-da-da-da-da-da-da, number one.
Well, I didn't know if we were actually doing this in order from one to five. I would never put these in order because I love them so much. And I actually, you know, I wanted to go for obscure, especially because, you know, not a lot, you know, the typical Halloween songs, you know, everybody knows. And right. So I just wanted to kind of broaden my horizons a little bit this time.
That's kind of what I'm doing this entire month. I've been hearing songs that I wasn't familiar with, so I'm loving it. I'm getting
I know,
songs.
Me too. I can't wait to, like, listen to the full versions of the ones you have. Mm-hmm. But so for me, I believe, and this is going to be an unpopular opinion, but I believe Corpse Bride is far superior to Nightmare Before Christmas. And I adore the film. I do see there, yeah, of course, there's flaws with every film.
Right.
But I love the way that they take this story, and they have two female leads, a male lead, and they have, like, this emotional, really upsetting story involved. Mm-hmm. But they show that the living are just as bored with life, but the dead are so happy with the joyous, you know, kind of like a Day of the Dead type of thing that they get to go with every day of their lives. So,
of course, there's
this
nothing
song,
to worry about when you're dead.
Exactly. So they sing a song, Remains of the Day, and the story about this one is Danny Elfman wanted to get somebody who had a scratchy voice and could really, you know, really sing and bring out this song, and he couldn't find anybody, and Tim Burton was like, just do it, you know, you did Jack Skellington's voice, just go ahead and do the voice of the skeleton leader. I can't remember his name, I'm going blank, but anyway, he said he went in, he recorded it for a day, and he had no voice for the rest of, like, 2 weeks or something like that, and this is the song Remains of the Day from Corpse Bride, sung by Danny Elfman and written by Danny Elfman.
Your corpses of cheer, at least those of you who still got an ear. I'll tell you a story, make a skeleton cry of our own jubilatiously lovely corpse bride. You might try hard and you might try brave, but we all end up the remains of the day.
I just like how they refer to saying, you know, yeah, we're all human beings and we're all going to fight, but hey, we're going to be just flesh and bone. Oh, not even flesh anymore. We're going to just be bones by the end of it. So yeah. I love that. I love that feature and line in it. And it gets a little bit darker. So definitely check it out. It's part of the storyline. If you've never seen Corpse Bride, I'd encourage you to watch the film because that song specifically has a key portion of storytelling in it. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I would definitely check it out. If you like Nightmare Before Christmas, I believe you will like this one a lot more. You never know. You might, maybe you do, maybe you will, maybe you won't, but I really do enjoy it.
Yeah. And surprisingly, it's actually a really good mystery too.
Yeah, I think I was always scared by this song because it goes into the murder of the bride. And mm-hmm. So I was like, I didn't understand it when I was younger, and gosh, the ending scares me to death too. But I and the voice work is great, because it's Helena Bonham Carter as the bride and Johnny Depp as Victor, the lead. Tracy Ullman's in it. Oh gosh, what's the guy's name who was in Big Fish, and Aaron Brockovich? I can't remember his name, but he's always in Tim Burton's films. But there's so many people, like an all-star cast in this thing. So, you know, it's really, really fun.
Yeah, then Michael Goff, who was Alfred in the original Batman series that Tim Burton had gotten started back in 89, he's got a part in it.
Yeah, oh my gosh, I remember that. Oh gosh, he's the head skeleton guy. Oh, it's
yeah,
so sweet.
He's like the wise man shaman, whatever sort of thing.
Hopscotch.
I haven't seen that movie in a long time, but I've got it on DVD. I really should sit down and watch it again.
I think you would really appreciate it for the, of course, the craftsmanship is really great to watch it. And somebody actually, I have to send it to you. Somebody posted a beautiful song collaboration of Emily's theme in Corpse Bride and Sally's song from Nightmare Before Christmas, and combined them both to make it like it was the same character. And it's gorgeous. Like some girl just, and she wrote her own lyrics for Emily's theme. It's gorgeous. I had to find it and send it to you, because I listened to it and I went, oh my gosh, I thought this was real.
Wow.
It's great. So
yeah, I'm interested in that now. Okay. So for my number one, I'm doing slightly a little bit different. This is actually by a band called Nightwish. Now, if you're not familiar with Nightwish, I'm not surprised, unless you live somewhere in the European soil, because they're actually from Europe. This is one of the first, well, basically a metal band of sorts, that decided they wanted their vocals to be done by an operatic-trained woman. And so they've combined this operatic-style vocal with this kind of metal music, and it's fantastic. This is the band that inspired Evanescence. So if you kind of notice like the great kind of very high quality vocal of Evanescence with that kind of rock and metal style, Nightwish is where that came from. I first came across this band, and actually there's this old Christmas, not really special, but it's about a short film called The Snowman, and there's this beautiful song called Walking in the Air. And it sprang to mind when Dice said, golly, I wish I could find that song online. I remember that song. And when I found it, I accidentally, first, before I found the real one, I found Nightwish's cover of it. And I was like, wow, this is amazing. And then just by happenstance, I found out that that's not the only old song they'd covered. They'd also done Andrew Lloyd Webber's Phantom of the Opera. Not the entire musical or opera, whatever it is, but the theme song, Phantom of the Opera, done by Nightwish. And I think that they translate more what this whole show should feel like, because I've read the book a few times. The book is fantastic. I think the stage play is okay. It doesn't live up to the book. The movie I thought that they did here recently didn't live up to even the stage play that I've seen. But this is one of the greatest villains, literary villains I've ever read. This guy puts every James Bond villain to shame. But they seem to keep wanting to do this pitiable character too far. And they kind of ruin a great villain by making him that pitiable. Now, there is a bit of pitiable too at the end, but basically what you have here is an albino who's got very sunken features, and his face is very skull-like. And but he is a genius. He is very wealthy. He has been a booby trap security designer for what do you call the wealthy people in the Middle East? A Maharaja or whatever. He basically used to design traps to keep his enemies away and all this other stuff. And eventually this guy, Eric, goes and builds an opera house and builds this underground lair, because a lot of people can't really accept his face because he is very frightening looking. But he uses his frightening visage to control the opera house to make it run the way he wants to in the book. And it's a very, very scary book, actually. And I don't think they've really translated the fear of it. But this version of Phantom of the Opera brings the fear back. So let's take a listen here. And as much as I like Michael Crawford and his singing, when you hear like the cast version, which I do have that cast album, I love the gravelly, rah, evil sounding sing once again, you know, that the guy brings to it.
Yes, I've heard this one before too, and I really enjoy it. So I didn't mean to interrupt you. I just wanted to say I really do enjoy this one too.
Yeah, it is a great one. And I don't think my wife likes this as much as I do. I think she likes Michael Crawford's voice very much.
I do. I would agree with her on that part. I do love the Phantom of the Opera. Again, that was another thing I forgot to put on my list, but I'm glad you did. So there you go.
Yeah, this is one I had to put on the list because I love it. And it's one of the ones that I have to listen to it at least twice over because I'm just, wow, it's so good. And Andrew Lloyd Webber, I mean, the guy is brilliant with his music writing and the music is fantastic. And I would really like to see a Phantom of the Opera film where they use Andrew Lloyd Webber's music as scoring in some fashion, but yet told the story that's in the book because it is a frightening tale and really, really good. And especially when you have characters that were left out of the stage one, like the Persian, who is basically someone who's come from Persia, where who's known Eric and knows that Eric has this habit of obsessively stalking women, and usually he's ended up killing them. So you know that, you know, Christine is in serious danger the entire time, and that's something that I felt was slightly lost in the stage version when I saw it. And so I would love to see someone do the actual story from the book and maybe use Andrew Lloyd Webber's music as a basis for the score of it, because the music is so good. So
I think you would like, I'm going to make a movie suggestion now to you and the listeners. If you've ever, you know, Freddy Krueger, the individual plays him, but he actually did his own Phantom of the Opera film in 1989.
And you actually enjoyed it?
I loved it. It actually is different.
It is.
If you've never seen it before, have you seen it?
I saw it when it came out because I was like, you know, I had actually become familiar with Phantom of the Opera back in the fifth grade.
So you were obsessed with it.
So yeah, we've listened to the music, and that's where I really started to appreciate, and I started to listen to more film score, and I started to appreciate that style of music. And from what the story was, I was expecting something like that, and then to see the Freddy Krueger one or Robert Englund one, it was so different, and it is frightening, but it's also very grotesque. And yes. I mean, it's got some interesting elements, but it's also got some what the heck is this
problems. But it's different than like every other one that is put out, because it always is pushing the Phantom and Christine together, and in a way it does, but then in a way it pulls it back, and you really are rooting for Christine to live. That's what you're rooting for, not for her to end up with Rao or whatever character it is. Richard. Raul, sorry. Mm-hmm. She says Raul in the show, so but I know I guess everybody pronunciates it a little. There's a different pronunciation in different ways, but I think it really pushes you to hope that she survives. It's like a horror film for her, and the way they set it up, it's really different. So I appreciate that film for it being different and not following. It's like Hook, when Hook does not follow the typical 1, 2, 3, 4 of a Peter Pan story, you know what I mean? It does its own thing, and that's what I appreciate it when films do that. So that's just my suggestion. If you want to check out a horror film you've never seen before, I check out Phantom. It is kind of gross and interesting from 1989, I think, but yeah, I think you'll really like it.
You might. It's a very rare and hard to find film at this point, and it's very, but if you're into a slasher type of movie, because this is more of a stalking and murdering, but instead of just simply hanging everyone, he's done horrific murders, and it does go back to that evil stalker obsession with Christine.
It's a little bit more true to the book in some retrospects. I haven't read the book in such a long time, and I want to do it again because I am also obsessed with Phantom. So Phantom and Peter Pan, both like two literary pieces, including Hunchback, I just adore. So
yeah, I haven't read all of Hunchback. I tried to once, but it's a very slow starter.
Yes, it is. It is. But if you want to check out something that's more true to the book than the Disney version, which is the Paris musical version, it's online. Definitely check that one out because it is different music and it's very dark, very, very dark. But I think you would like that too because you seem to be like the gothic. I like the gothic aspect of literature. So I think you would actually really appreciate it.
That's the thing is I'm weird. I'm very lighthearted and everything. I'm very strange because I can go, as we demonstrated in the show, a very, very happy Disney. I love me some Frank Sinatra and stuff like that. And then I'll turn turn the corner and go straight up metal. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm very, I have two halves of my personality that really kind of shine. So, you know, it's a gothic beauty, but overall, I'm not a very dark person, but I do enjoy a good scary story every once in a while. But that's the thing, I'm not really into like the modern horror movies, but I love old style horror movies. And yet I play a lot of survival horror games, which are completely different. If it was a film, I wouldn't watch it, but as a game, I will play it. I'm weird.
Yeah, no, you're not weird at all. Everybody has their own little preferences, you know what I mean? And I don't get to talk a lot about my gothic love, you know what I mean, for literature a lot. So this is great for me. I'm so happy that you asked me to be on the show. This was a lot of fun. So, you know, thank you, Jeremy. I really, really appreciate it.
And of course, and thank you for coming along with us and joining in on the Halloween party.
I'm sorry I talked your ear off. That's the only other thing I really do apologize about.
No problem.
Sorry, everybody.
Thank you for listening to the Neverland Podcast.
We invite you back next week for more fun and adventure.
Until then, remember to keep a pixie in your pocket.
It's that young at heart, positive attitude that you can share with others.
And remember to visit our website at neverlandpodcast.com.
There you can find links to our news page, our shop,
our contact page, where you can easily send an email to podcast@neverlandpodcast.com.
You can also find our Neverlanders page, where you can find out how to become an official Lost Boy or Pixie, because girls are too clever to get lost.
Become a real Neverlander.
Please feel free to leave us a voicemail at 816-226-6492.
And be sure to follow us on Twitter at NeverlandPcast.
And like our Neverland Podcast fan page on Facebook.
We also have a group on Facebook for you to join.
We also appreciate your support to keep the Neverland Podcast up and running.
Visit patreon.com/NeverlandPodcast to donate to keeping the pixie dust alive.
Copyright content featured on the Neverland Podcast is copyright of their respective creators and used under fair use license.
All original content is copyright of Blue Band Productions, and a very special thanks to Yeehaw Bob Jackson at yeehawbob.com for our new ending music.
God bless!
Yeah! Hello, everybody, this is Yeehaw Bob Jackson. Neverland Podcast, we love you. Neverland Podcast, we love you. Neverland Podcast, it's true. Neverland Podcast, we love you.
Yeah!
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.